follow us online.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at PT Pinecast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. We are doing it live. This is your PT Pinecast happy hour. Your first round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it properly in your clinical practice. Find them online at owensrecoveryscience.com. I actually just recently did an interview with Johnny Owens and Kyle Kimbrell from Owens Recovery Science. You can find that in our video library, YouTube, Facebook, or, of course, on our podcast, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Let's get this show on the road here. Going to bring in our first guest in a second. He's a professor at Duke University in the Department of Physical Therapy. He is also on the APTA's Board of Directors. He's our vice speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Kyle Covington to the show.
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
You got your own intro, Kyle. We poured the
screen. First time in my life I got my own intro.
Welcome, friend. Welcome to the show, man. Good to talk to you.
Good to see you.
First question is always the hardest on this program. It always gets easier from there. What are we drinking?
We're drinking a little craft bourbon from a distillery actually on Long Island, New York, in honor of your native New York.
We're here in the Empire State.
The Rough Rider Distillery, it's actually named after Teddy Roosevelt, and all the different drinks are after different parts of his life history. So.
I like it. I'm sticking with bourbon as well because I know you're a man of bourbon. I got Bullet with three ice cubes.
Good stuff. Cheers.
So, cheers to you, and we'll have a little sippy sip. Ah, there we go. Do you want to let the audience know, if you guys are watching this either live or afterwards, you can drop a comment below. If you have a question for Kyle, and just so you guys know, we're going to cover APTA House of Delegates, which just wrapped up. I mean, that's got to be fresh in a lot of people's minds. We want to make sure we kind of give a breakdown, really let people know what happened and what does that mean. If you have a specific question about something in general about House of Delegates or about something specific we're talking about, do not hesitate. Drop that in the comments below. Or if you just want to say what's up to Kyle, you can do that too. We want to test and make sure that thing's working. So if you're watching, let us know where you're watching from. Just give us a location, geographic, and we'll make sure we can get that. We've got Kyle Stapleton is saying hello, and my mom always checking in. She watches everything. Hi, Mom. So let's start. APTA House of Delegates was something that you're part of. But first, I wanted to talk about something you created, which is similar to House of Delegates, which is the House of Duke-legates.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm a professor, associate professor at Duke's Doctor of Physical Therapy program. And I guess 4 years ago, because, you know, APTA and governance and the way we make decisions for our profession is really important to me. And I began to realize that our students didn't understand it at all, right, or understand how much of a voice they can even have as an early professional. And that's a big passion of mine, is helping our early professionals really get involved and really understand that they have a voice in our profession too. So we started doing a big semester-long project that I called House of Duke-legates, after, you know, Duke University and the House of Delegates. And our students work in teams over the course of a semester to create motions for our house. They debate those motions actually through Twitter. Another sort of side motivation of mine was teaching students that there is a professional way to use social media and engage with people around the country about ideas. It helps me sort of tag colleagues and friends from around the profession. So we have a lot of people now that follow that discussion every spring. And then it ends in a big day-long debate. I have a lot of my friends and colleagues from APTA in North Carolina that come in and participate with the students and act as mentors and help sort of debate these ideas that the students have. And I got to say, they always amaze me every year. This year especially, They come up with ideas that APTA's House of Delegates haven't come up with, and things that I think are really good, and things that sometimes delegation sort of have paid attention to and taken to a next level. And I know there's lots of other academic programs that do similar sort of projects to engage their students and understand that. But, you know, we've had a lot of great success with students really sort of getting the bug and understanding that they have a voice in advocacy and a voice in policy writing and staying involved in the association in that way.
It's cool. And you live streamed this before in the past, so people can kind of watch. And you do something interesting, which I think really helps stir the pot in a good way, which was, so the students create their emotions, right? That's their decision in yeah. teams. But then you actually set it up where a little bit where there's going to be some cross agreement, disagreement to kind of stir the pot a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I've taught long enough to know that sometimes you got to intentionally stir the pot a little bit. So the students are also assigned other teams to be ready to sort of oppose or bring up issues with their motion. And also, you know, we bring in about 25 or 30 mentors that are experienced in the House or on the APTA board or in association leadership on the state or national level. And they stir the pot quite a bit too by helping the students understand sort of what are the real world implications of these ideas. So it's one thing for a group of students to come up with an idea. It's another thing to implement it in real life. And that's where those mentors are hugely important. And plus just the benefit of having them there present with us to expose the students to leaders from outside their own sort of school yeah. is pretty impactful.
Well, two things. Number one, why I love this is you show them in real time how to professionally debate something. You know, like you have to make sure you're focused on the idea, not the person, right? And make right. sure you're debating this, you know, from a good point of view, not just because you don't like it. But you take it a step further, because if I said, listen, students, here's my advice for you. Debate professionally, disagree professionally. I told right. you what to do. I haven't showed you how to do it, but you do this because you're like, you're going to do this in action, and I'm going to give you mentors to sit right next to you during this to show you how to do that the right way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in general, we have a challenge disagreeing sometimes in the current day and age. And I think that lesson for the students and how can you really engage in a tough debate about things and walk away friends and walk away colleagues and walk away learning something about the other person's perspective. And that sort of format of a structured debate really helps that happen. And I think the students really get a lot out of that.
Because some of these things that you're debating at House of Delegates or Duplicates, either you get behind it, there's emotional attachment.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that doesn't come into it because you want to remain professional. But you're also really, really passionate about it. So how do you do that? You probably need some instruction to do that. And this is a great living example of it.
Yeah. So, you know, we do this every year. And if there's people out there that are interested in watching next year or getting involved, or even if I've had students that have reached out from other programs. I've had faculty that have reached out from other programs just to learn more about how we're structured. And I'm always happy to talk about it.
That's cool. We'll let people know that they can ask questions or comments and we can see them live. And I think this is a pretty good one. I want to know.
Yeah.
How many student motions from the House of Duplicates actually made it to the House of Delegates floor?
Yeah. Hey, Jake. Thanks for the question. None have, and which is interesting. There's some that I wish had, but now in my position as vice speaker, I'm not in a place where I can make that happen. When I was a delegate for North Carolina, we could have sort of pushed to make some happen. But the good thing is there are a lot of delegates that come and participate in the student motions. And so I'm always hopeful. That's my secret sort of wish that one year someone will grab onto a motion that our students do and take it to the actual APTA House, because some of them have been pretty worthwhile and pretty good ideas that I think would push the forward. Now, some things that have happened are, and this year was a good example, that our students created a position statement about emergency physical therapy practice. And right. another team this year created a position statement about sort of workforce data collection. And without them knowing it, both of those were actual motions that were developing on the national side. And both those motions went to the floor of the House, not because of our students, but it's always interesting to me what's in their minds and how the timing works, because we've had several instances where our students develop a motion without knowing it that the actual House is developing at the same time.
And while before this is going on, before the actual House of Duplicates in person yeah. meeting, you assign them all Twitter accounts as a group, and they've got it. Now they're firing, they're lobbing, you know, jabs and opposition well before the event, with the rest of the world able to see. And that's a good way to show, hey, you can disagree professionally via social media, but it's a real life example.
Exactly. And so they, you know, they get a little bit of a prep speech about the world's watching and this is public and, you know, you've got to be professional on Twitter, but they also get sort of surprised sometimes when strangers from across the country sort of start weighing in on their Twitter. And Jimmy, you've done that. And I know some other friends and colleagues of mine have done that, because the conversation gets interesting and they get really excited when they see people outside of the walls of their own school that are paying attention.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Jimmy Piscini's making a comment here. Virtual format used this year in the House of Delegates, and we'll get to that in a second, the APTA House of Delegates. Would be cool to see if other schools across the country would mirror that makeup. So let's shift gears from the House of Duplicates. Let's go to the APTA's House of Delegates. All right.
Right.
So you're the vice speaker there. We're going to get to the basics. I think I know enough that I know that it's this big governing body and that things get done there and, you know, things are brought and Robert's rules and there's a gavel and there's I oppose and I yield my time. But how, when someone asks, what's the APTA House of Delegates? How do you respond?
Yeah, I respond that the APTA House of Delegates is a representative body, right? So there are delegates from every state chapter that are apportioned based on the number of physical therapists in those states. So just like Congress, you know, that's the easiest way to understand it is that House of Delegates is sort of like Congress in that there are representatives from every state. And there's also representatives from APTA sections. There's the board of directors that's there. And there's also other groups like the Student Assembly and the Physical Therapy Assistant Caucus. So it's all the important voices of our profession in one room for a few days. And the goal and the purpose of the House of Delegates for the American Physical Therapy Association is to set policy and guidelines that speak to who we are as a profession and who we want to be as a profession. So they're really sort of the policymaking body. And in sort of APTA governance, you have the House of Delegates and you have the APTA Board of Directors.
Right.
And they have different roles that are very much complementary and need to work together to push the organization forward.
All right. And this year, as you can see on the screen, APTA's House of Delegates was in, well, it was in everybody's house pretty much because it was virtual. How'd that?
Yeah, that was, you know, as we've all gotten used to, things changed dramatically once the pandemic began. And typically House of Delegates is in a hotel ballroom or a convention center where there's, you know, about 500 of us gathered together for 3 days or more to do this business of the association. And that's an event that's planned on sort of a year-round basis. Yeah. And, you know, the APTA made a lot of different difficult decisions earlier this year to support our members and our patients when the pandemic began. And one of those was to cancel travel and cancel in-person meetings for the health and safety of our members. And so that included the House of Delegates. And this was the 76th House of Delegates. So it's been going on for a long time. And it was the first one that didn't happen in person. And the sort of crazy thing in hindsight is that we had 10 weeks to figure that out. And that was due to an incredible amount of work and effort from the American Physical Therapy Association staff, who really started with a blank slate of how do you do this and figured out how to use technology and educate our delegates and educate the speaker and vice speaker and secretary and the board of directors to how are we going to make this work and how are we going to do really important and meaningful business in a way that none of us had ever done it before. And so that took, I think, every minute of those 10 weeks to figure out. Literally at times it felt like around the clock for some people, I'm sure. But I think APTA pulled off an amazing event virtually that went fairly seamlessly and got a lot of really important business done.
Well, you're talking about close to 500 plus people, right? I mean, just you and I connecting here and making sure anybody on the internet can hear it. Like, you know, that's difficult, but you're connecting again, 500 plus people, and there's voting too, which you want to make sure is secure, not tampered, goes off correctly. So, I mean, you know, any hiccups, any things going down with all the virtualness? Of the House of
Delegates? No, it really went
good.
I think better than anybody expected it would, and seamless. But there was a lot of practice ahead of time. There was a lot of, I mean, you mentioned voting. It's not only voting on motions, but it's also voting for APTA national candidates, which is a really important thing. And we needed to make sure that that was secure and legitimate and went well. So delegates had two different platforms. They were watching through a modified Zoom platform and voting through a different platform called Lumi. Sort of the staff and officers behind the scenes We're using Slack and some other platforms to make it all happen. And everybody had their job. Everybody was rehearsed. And there were a ton of people behind the scenes that made that all work. And you know, I think sort of where the hitches were ahead of time. Like, we had to get the delegates all educated on how to do this. So we had practice sessions with the delegates the weeks leading up to it. What normally happens at the in-person house is that our candidates for national office interview in person, and then the election happens. That was all done online, actually, a couple of weeks in advance. Probably our biggest hiccup for any of you that were using Zoom, one random Sunday in May, Zoom crashed internationally. Yeah. That was actually one of the days that we were doing national candidate interviews. So that was probably our biggest sort of snafu and emergency, but we made that work, and all the candidates and the staff were amazing to just immediately pivot to figure out a different day to make that happen.
Yeah. Jimmy Pacini winning, and say you never thought it was. It went smoothly. I was watching for a decent portion of it, and it did. I mean, it's difficult to know what's going on behind the scenes, but you can tell when the people on screen are, you know, trying to look, they're looking smooth. There must be something going on there. So let's get into what you got to do and what your role, and then we're also going to let the audience know. We're going to talk about some of the things that happened at House of Delegates, but then Kyle's going to explain to, like, me, the dumbest guy in the room, like, what does that mean? So let's start with what the vice speaker does in the House of Delegates. What's your role?
Sure. So I am one of the 15 members of the APTA Board of Directors. So there are 15 of us that are elected to be board members, and the board is responsible for the organization and the sort of strategic plan and fiduciary role of the organization, and making sure that APTA is an organization that's moving forward, being contemporary, and also responding to the needs of our patients and our members. So I sit as a board member, and like all the board members, we all have different assignments. And so I was elected to be vice speaker. So a portion of my assignments are, of course, to the House of Delegates. So we often, you'll hear the term House officers, which are the speaker, the vice speaker, and the secretary. And all three of us are members of the APTA board. So we each have roles as board members, but we have roles to make sure the House works and functions, and that the delegates can do the business that they need to do. So throughout the year as vice speaker, I am responsible for sort of delegate education, making sure delegates have the information they need to be prepared to do their job. I am responsible. The House is broken up into four regional caucuses. So you have your states, but then the states work together in regional caucuses to share ideas and work together. So I, as vice speaker, I'm a point person to the regional caucus leads. And I also, all of the House officers sit on what's called the Reference Committee, which is a committee of the House that helps delegates sort of get their motions ready and make sure their language makes sense and make sure it fits with everything the APTA is doing or how we describe things, and really helps prepare delegates to take their idea from an idea to an actual motion that the House of Delegates can work with and debate on. So I work with that Reference Committee throughout the year as well.
I didn't know that. I thought your stuff was really limited to, like, kind of preparing the House of Delegates, but I guess preparing all the things that lead up to House of Delegates, also your role.
Yeah. And also our delegates are busy all year. So they're engaged in discussion on a hub about ideas. You know, we take that sort of idea generation and distill it down into actual language of emotion. So that's going on all year. And we also do sort of some virtual meetings throughout the year. Typically before COVID, we did virtual meetings throughout the year to sort of discuss ideas and get ideas ready sort of for prime time at the House of Delegates.
That's cool.
Now, actually at the House and during the House of Delegates, the vice speaker's role is one, to support the speaker, right? So like a vice president or a vice speaker or a first runner up would do in a beauty pageant. I'm there in case something happens to the speaker. And so then my job,
you can say you're not candy.
Then my job becomes to chair the meeting if the speaker's unable to. But the vice speaker sort of has a lot of behind the scenes role during the actual House. So this year, that was a little different than it had been in the past because we were on a virtual platform. The vice speaker's main role during debate is I'm sort of the conduit between all of the delegates and what the speaker's doing. So if you've ever watched sort of a meeting in Robert's Rules of Order, the speaker's job is sort of balanced debate, make sure the delegates' questions are getting answered and concerns are getting addressed. And my job then becomes to take all of the delegates' requests to speak and funnel them in an organized way to the speaker, so that the speaker, who was Sue Griffin for the past 6 years, had what she needed to balance that debate, get the delegates' questions answered. So as the delegates were logging in to their platform, what they wanted to do or say, my job was to sort of distill that down, organize it, and get it to the speaker. And then I actually just, you know, had some different roles this year to make the tech work smoothly. The delegates heard me a lot chiming in on different things like objections or seconds or points of order when a delegate would call that. Because normally when we're in person, the delegate just has the right to stand up and yell objection or point of order, but that wasn't possible. So my job became to be the voice of the delegates in those instances this year.
Right. What is point of order? Always people yelling at the meeting. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it doesn't get used the right way. Point of order is actually if you think a rule has been broken or if you think something's not happening the right way, you can yell point of order. And you can also yell point of privilege, which is just if you have something specific you want to say or do, and then the speaker or chair of the meeting can give you the rights to do that. But
so point of order is literally like you're at an NFL game and you're just yelling at the ref like flag, flag, flag.
Yeah, exactly. Like a rule's been.
Except in this case, the ref might actually throw the flag. You might be right.
Well, the ref actually has to listen when a delegate calls point of order, and it stops debate and it pauses everything, and you address whatever that concern is.
That's cool. But this is another example. We started off with House of Duplicates. How do you debate professionally? There's got to be some sort of rules. Otherwise, the loudest person in the room is going to get heard, and that's not fair. So there's got to be rules, and there's got to be someone who, in the middle of this chaos, because people, you know, they try to elbow the rules a little bit to get what they want across. There's got to be a group of people whose job it is to make sure this is going to get done the right way, and you can't just power through something.
Yeah, and the cool thing about parliamentary procedure as a self-proclaimed Robert's Rules of Order nerd is that like all that sort of set forth, and what you don't necessarily see is that it really is meant, and those rules support the minority voice getting heard, right? So in a room where there's 300 people that might, or 380 people that might think one thing, but only 20 that don't, if you just let the 380 go, those 20 would have trouble getting their voice heard. And Robert's Rules of Order sort of protects that. So the speaker or the chair is intentionally, like, you might have the first 20 people get in the queue to speak for a motion, and then those against just got in slower. Well, it doesn't matter that they were in later. Like, you balance between for and against, so that it's a more fair process, and you get to hear both sides of the debate constantly.
That's the point. We want to hear both sides. So yeah, I guess it's a good example. When you have 380 against 20, you might just say, well, it's 380 against 20, call it a game and go home. But the reason you all come together in person or virtually is to hear these things, not necessarily to be heard. It's the opposite.
And I can think of tons of times where, you know, you went into the room thinking one thing was going to happen, and one voice speaks up and says something that totally changes your thoughts around it, totally changes the sort of mood or tenor or attitude of the room, and it goes a completely different direction. So that's the cool thing about the House, is that it's intended to be a place where those voices can be heard. And those voices are really important, because as we move forward in the profession, we want to hear different points of view, and we want to make sure we're modernizing what we do as a profession and as an association. And so we want to support those voices that sometimes feel quieter or feel like they can't speak up to have a voice to do that.
You're the echo chamber busters. That's what the rules do, is they try to defeat the just doing and saying the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that. And that's what we really want to support. And that's one of my jobs as a House officer and a vice speaker, is to make sure we're putting sort of processes in place in addition to Robert's Rules of Order, which is sort of the parliamentary procedure, to make sure that all those voices can be heard and respected, because sometimes those voices that suddenly get to speak up really change the conversation, and we want a House that can support that.
Well, point of order right now, Teresa from New York says that this should be recorded and sent to new delegate. And then I believe Jimmy from California said, well, some seasoned delegates could benefit from this too. So I like the conversations that are going on there. Yeah. Make sure to drop any of the questions that you have for Kyle right now in the comment section, and we can get to a couple of those. But we want to shift the focus a little bit to what actually happened. Now that you're setting the stage for us and people are kind of starting to learn about what the House of Delegates is and does specifically, what happened at this one, and what's it mean? So let's start with this topic, right? APTA had a telehealth charge. Yeah. Did you run somewhere? I'm not really sure what this means. What is a charge? And what's going on with the APTA health, telehealth charge?
Sure. And I'll back up one step, Jimmy, and say that there were about 36, if memory is correct. It was a bit of a blur. I think there were 36 different motions
that you had to
that got taken care of during that those 3 days. So the delegates did a ton of hard work to push through a really packed agenda in a shorter amount of time than normal because of the virtual format. So I think Jimmy and I are just going to highlight a few, and maybe some questions will come up. But there were tons of other things that we're not talking about that got moved forward this year. And these are just some that Jimmy picked out to talk about. But the telehealth one was huge because, you know, the APTA had already had a position on the books about the importance of telehealth, but sort of in response to all that was going on in the world, the delegates in New York actually brought this forward, wanted to charge APTA, and charge is sort of a process in the APTA House of Delegates for, you know, you can have a position statement that says sort of what we believe, and then the charge is meant to make something happen. And this was a charge that said we should, as an organization, as a profession, really come up with what are our ideal ways of doing telehealth, and maybe provide some instruction or some information about what's the right way to do telehealth, because it's so new to everybody. And you know, before COVID, we sort of said telehealth, it's a good idea. And now suddenly, I think we all realize now we need to know the optimal way to go about this that's best for patients, best for providers. And you know, it's really interesting because this is a great example of something that was timely and in responsive to what was happening in our profession and in our world. But at the same time, APTA was on this other front, really battling and going to bat for our profession to get telehealth covered and really open doors wide. And that's a huge story, I think, to tell, that an amazing amount of advocacy went into sort of the gains we made as a profession in telehealth over the last 3 or 4 months. And that's all due to APTA's advocacy, physical therapist advocacy, and even our patients' advocacy, where now, you know, we have the ability for PTs and PTAs to provide telehealth that's reimbursed, and APTA is still working really hard to make sure that that sticks after the sort of pandemic dies down. Or are we still going to be able to provide those needed services to the patient that needs it? And that's a huge value, I think, of our organization, that they fought for that. And it was perfectly in concert with what New York brought forward to say, this is important. The doors are wide open now for us to do it. Let's make sure we have some great ideas around the best or right way to do it.
And in terms of advocacy, this will just be a nod to the team. It's not a person. It's an entire team of people who advocate for all of these things that APTA would like to get done. There's a team of people. We've had, you know, Kara Gaynor on the show numerous times, Justin Elliott team. Whenever people say, you know, the APTA should do this in Washington, well, there's a team of people who are doing those things. That's what they do 40, 50, 60 hours a week. That's what they do. So telehealth, the charge really saying, okay, now that you say that this is important, we're trying to nudge you and say, do something about it. We want to see a plan into action. Give us a plan or tell us what we're going to do about it now.
Well, just, you know, it was basically instructing the organization or the association to work on sort of describing telehealth practices for the physical therapist. So there's literature about telehealth in medicine. There's literature about telehealth in other professions. But this was really a sort of a nudge to say, let's have our own description of what telehealth is or should look like for physical therapy. So a lot of times when these charges happen, it sets into motion. Well, honestly, a lot of times things are already happening in APTA, right? APTA was already working a huge amount on telehealth. But now we've heard from the delegates that sort of specifically say, we want more better understanding specifically about what telehealth should be for physical therapy. So, you know, that will develop now. And after any House of Delegates, the busiest people afterwards are always the APTA staff, who then take all those 36 motions this year that were passed and then figure out what to do with them and how to make them actionable, or how to do what the House asked to be done, or in the case of just position statements, sometimes those drive decisions that the organization makes downstream. And a lot of times it informs the APTA board about how we make decisions and how we need to operate on the board side of things.
So as much as we say, we want you to talk to your local congressmen and women, you talking to your delegates can get something in, or let them know what you think is important, because that'll get brought up and it'll get put into place. I mean,
yeah,
advocating the profession is important too.
And I think the telehealth motion was an example of where a couple of members said, I think this is important. And then it made it sort of all the way up to a motion that was passed by the House of Delegates this year.
All right. So APTA telehealth charge, important now, as a lot of things are going virtual. Let's see where this goes. And we now know that since it happened at House of Delegates, APTA staff is now on it. They will go forth and they will do the magic. Let's move to the next topic we wanted to cover. APTA behavioral and mental health position. So what is this? It's different than a charge. It's a position.
It's a position statement. So position statements, the House sort of has positions and policies, or positions and guidelines, and then charges. The position statement is sort of a, this is what we believe kind of statement. And it doesn't necessarily mean APTA as an organization is going to churn something, but it's really important a lot of times for us to have position statements about who we are as a profession, and also who we want to be as a profession. So sometimes you hear these conversations at House of Delegates where folks say, well, not many PTs do blank. And sometimes that's not the point. The point is, should we be doing something, or do we want to be doing something? And so the behavioral and mental health position is a new position for us that says PTs should be engaged in collaborating. This is not the exact words I'm using, but the idea of the position statement is that PTs should be collaborating with mental health providers for the best interest of their patients, right? So we're not necessarily experts in mental health,
right?
But what can we do to collaborate? And, you know, sort of the downstream sort of inside baseball, I guess, of position statements is that those get used by a lot of other organizations, right? So people will search and see, what are the physical therapists saying about blank? Those get used sometimes by states that are fighting legislative or legal battles on the state side. And they can say, well, APTA, which is our largest national organization, has a position statement that this is important. And then sometimes it's helpful that we have these position statements because you never know what's going to come up in the regulatory or legislative arenas on a federal or state level, right? So imagine that a bill is introduced tomorrow that impacts our profession as it relates to behavioral or mental health. Or maybe there's a coalition getting formed, or some federal task force getting formed about health providers that should be involved in collaborating around mental health. Well, the fact that we now have a position statement that says physical therapists should be involved in this gives more a sort of credence to that, and gives more ability for other organizations, other professions, or other sort of entities to look at us and say, okay, they've already said that they are involved in this and that it's important.
So this is like, I mean, I even saw you do the hand motion of like this is us planting our flag and saying, this is what we believe, we stand for this, and this is exactly it. So that's what APTA's behavioral and mental health position was. Let's move on. I know we have some students out there right now. We've got, let's say, Yusura was coming in. We've got Elise. So this one's important for the students. This was APTA Transparency of Accredited PT Education Programs. What's this?
And I see some great questions in the chat about how to get involved, and we'll get to that, I promise, before the podcast is over. But so, the position about transparency in education was brought forward this year in response to last year, President Dunn, in her annual address, which she does every year at the House of Delegates, and did it virtually this year. But last year, one of the things she talked about in that annual address was the need for us to really be aware of what's happening in education, and making sure that the debt our students are facing and the challenges of proliferating PT programs are being addressed in the right ways.
Yeah.
And so she sort of made a call to the profession to think about that and act on it appropriately. And so we saw some of that in the motions that happened this year. And I think that's another important concept of the House. The House is not just a single year thing. 1 year informs the next and things come back and things get changed and new ideas get talked about over time, which is important. But this was an example of that where Arizona, in combination with the student assembly and the student assembly delegates, brought this position statement forward. And basically the position statement describes the importance of academic programs being very clear about what all the costs are that are associated with that program. Because it's one thing to see the tuition amount. It's another thing to see all the fees and the cost of living and, you know, this lab fee and this book and all those types of things. And so this was in general a position statement that the Arizona and Student Assembly motion, Student Assembly delegates said, brought to the House, excuse me, that said, we should really be aware as a profession of the costs associated to attending PT schools and that the PT programs should really take a step forward in being leaders in describing what really is involved in the cost of education.
Yeah, it's similar to like, you know, we just want to know what's on the label, man. Anything you're drinking or eating, it's got a label. Let's just be really clear about it. So that's great. You know, this way you're upfront. I just like how the word transparency is in there. And if you're going to be accredited, you're going to produce our future, we want to make sure they're well informed. So this one seems great. I know the students were excited about that. How great is that? The students got to bring something. What they had said got brought to the actual House of Delegates.
Yeah. And I got to give a plug too for the Education Leadership Partnership right now, which is a combination of APTA and representatives of APTA board and staff and ACAPT, which is the Academy of PT Education and the Academy of PT Education and then ACAPT and APTA make up ELP. And they've been working really hard on these issues around student debt, and a really comprehensive student debt report just came out actually, in a way. I think it sort of might have gotten lost a little bit in the House of Delegates last week, but I'd encourage people to look for that report because there's some really important information about this sort of state of student debt and what those three related but separate organizations of the APTA, ACAPT, and the Academy of PT Education are really working hard on. And that's been some strong leadership from the American Physical Therapy Association to push that forward. And this position statement, I think, is just one aspect of that.
Love it. All right. The next one, we will let you know that APTA has on their website a list of all of the things that happened at House Delegates, being transparent, letting you know. We're only able to break down a few of those today because, you know, Kyle's a busy man. So we want to get to this next one, which is APTA Standards of Practice. I went through the list of what happened in House of Delegates. I skipped over this because I didn't understand it, but you do. And you said, no, this one's important. We need to talk about this one.
Yeah. So the APTA Standards of Practice, I think, is a document that gets overlooked a lot by the sort of, you know, by people that don't know it's there, right? It probably gets mentioned in PT schools. Delegates know it's there, but it's a vitally important document for our profession because it describes and outlines the sort of conditions that are essential to provide high quality physical therapy that impacts society. Okay. And so that document is one of the documents that can only be changed by the House of Delegates. And so it's sort of one in my bucket, a big deal documents in our profession that really describe who we are, what we do, and what's the right way to do it. And so it's an important read for any physical therapist or physical therapist assistant or student. And what happened this year is that Massachusetts brought forward this idea that has been talked about before, but you know, the standard of practice is a long document. And one section of it describes our role in a plan of care. And the wording was changed. And as the former speaker says, and a lot of people that are involved in the House, words matter, right? Yeah. And so, you know, as a profession, we've sort of progressed from years ago where we got a prescription and we just did what the prescription said. And then we started sort of moving more into autonomous practice. and managing a plan of care. And what I think happened this year with the modernization of the standards of practice is we took another big step forward of saying, we don't just manage a plan of care, like we manage patients and clients. And it's not just this episode, but it's a bigger thing than that. And that's taking us from a level of a patient coming to see me to sort of fix their energy, their injury, maybe their energy, but to a higher level of, I'm going to be your physical therapist and you're going to come see me over your life. Or in my practice, you know, I've spent lots of time in neuromuscular disorders where I see a patient one time a year when they're there to visit, to get their checkup. But so I don't have a plan. My plan of care is sort of a management plan for their life and their integration into society and their movement and their pain management. And so I think that sort of that language change in our standards of practice really gives us ammunition as a profession to again, say we're managing patients on a level bigger than just this one isolated injury or incident. And we want to be the person that helps you across time. And so I think that that's a really important one. And that was another one of those conversations where sometimes people said, well, not all PTs are doing that right now, but that to me, that's not the point. The point is that's who we want to be in the future. And that's where we want to work towards so that we all are doing that and all have the ability to do that.
And that's how it gets done, is it's got to get done. It's got to be put in writing somewhere. And it's the standards of practice. But this is where it really highlights that words, in fact, do matter. Right. And you can influence those words if you either are a delegate or you speak to your delegates.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You ready to do, we're going to do three questions right now. You ready for this? Were you prepared? Did you study for this?
We'll see.
Right. Three questions. Let's do that right now. All right. Three questions brought to you by our friends from Arias Medical Staffing. Travel PT might not be first on your mind right now, but there is a need for physical therapists in a lot of different places across the U.S. So Arias can get you to where you are most needed and anywhere in the 50 U.S. states. Lots of settings. See what they have to offer. AURUSmedical.com. That is AURUSmedical.com. No pressure here, Kyle, but first question on three questions is a where question. You're based in North Carolina, Duke. But if you could go anywhere in the 50 U.S. states and do whatever and vice speak, where would you want to go? If you had carte blanche, where would you want to go vice speak?
Yeah, I would go vice speak in Alaska, I guess. I got the chance to go there on a family vacation last year, and it's like another world, right? But it's still the United States, and it's just jaw-droppingly beautiful. And like, I could spend some time there.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Had a chance to go there for about a week. And I'll tell you, the people from Arias tell me all the time, people always say, well, I'd love to go to Alaska or Hawaii, but that probably won't happen. And they're like, oh no, we get positions. Submissions and requests for PTs and PTAs in Alaska and Hawaii all the time.
Yeah, there's a big need in both those states.
So go up there. I mean, I know a girl who went up there for the last 6-8 months and she's like, it was great. There is a need. AURUSmedical.com. One more time. It's AURUSmedical.com. Second question is a what question. Selfishly, this is how I really build up my Netflix queue or my reading list or my podcast list. It's a what question. What's something you either watched or read or downloaded that you're like, yeah, this other people should know about this?
Yeah, I've done a lot of Robert's Rules of Order reading the last month. But before that, sort of the last good book I read was Leadership in Turbulent Times. So it's a Doris Kearns Goodwin book that sort of profiles Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt Lyndon Johnson. And sort of their different paths through life in leadership. And then the last quarter of the book is like when they had to lead in really difficult times. And
yeah,
so it's a good read.
Pretty important now, right? I mean, this feels pretty turbulent in history. So that's a good read. That's how I build up my reading list. Third question is a who question. Who's someone the audience should know more about?
Yeah, this is a tough one. And there's so many people that I think everybody should know about. And so many great colleagues of mine that I love to brag about. I guess in the spirit of talking about the House of Delegates today, I'll say Bill McGeehee, yeah. who is the brand new Speaker of the House. Bill's been involved in the APTA for a long time and is coming in as the new Speaker. So I think he's going to do a lot of great things, and I'm looking forward to getting to work with him. But he's somebody you should know more about.
Yeah, Bill McGeehee, good guy. We had Jeanine Gunn, Dan Mills, Vicky Tilley.
Yep. Who's that other one?
Sky Donovan. Board of directors as well. So yeah, Bill McGeehee, great guy on your list. That's three questions. You're off the hot seat again from our friends at Arias Medical Staffing. That gives us a second to take a quick drink real quick. But thank you for our friends on three questions. All right, you're off the hot seat there.
Okay.
Where you can really get interactive, right? We reviewed a lot of the major things that happened at House of Delegates. You can get really interactive, start asking questions in the comments below. We already see some of them up there that I'm going to bring in. And we're going to start with how can someone get more involved? I think this person, I think you are familiar.
Yeah, I think I know her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, Yusra.
Hey, Dr. Covington, smiley face. Do you have advice for new grads who have been involved in House of Delegates as students and want to run for delegate early on? You don't have to wait. If you want to get involved, please do. And especially if they're moving to a new state. So Yusra, one of your students at Duke University, Director of Communications for the APTA student section of the APTA. She's got these roots in North Carolina, what she's asking specifically, not just how to get involved. How do I get involved when I'm going to a new place where they might not know me?
Yeah, I think, the great thing about physical therapists is we love new grads and students. So I think that the first step is showing up or sending an email or making a phone call. You find out who the leaders are in your chapter, wherever you're going, and you just show up. Or give a call. I cannot imagine a situation where a new person to the state, a new professional or a student would call a chapter leader and say, "Hey, I'm interested. I want to get involved," and you not hear anything or be supported right. to do that. I think specifically to the House of Delegates, different states elect delegates differently. Terms are different, or the way they're. What's that? No, like some states you're just there for your 1 year term. Some states it's a 2 year term. Some states have term limits. So it's different from state to state. Some states have positions for early professionals. Some states don't. But no matter whether you can get elected or not right out of graduation, I would say sit in with the delegates, like sit in on their meetings, show up. Talk, hear the issues, learn about the issues, ask questions, find a delegate who can be a mentor and explain things to you. That's going to make you a better prepared delegate whenever you do get elected and, sure. and you will get elected. And just be involved and show up and also realize that, that maybe you don't get elected the first couple of times, but there's another job for you. And that helps you be engaged and be informed. So when you do get to the House of Delegates, I would also say that some states, not all states, have an assembly, which means that on a state level, they have sort of a House of Delegates at a state level. Okay. So Texas, Florida, Massachusetts, Illinois, and California, I might be leaving another one out. That's another way, great way to get involved in this kind of process on the state level.
Show up, plow through, keep showing up. So we talked about this a few times, but I really wanted to actually throw this to you to give you a chance to talk about it specifically. I feel like you hinted at it in a few of the things we talked about earlier. Why should you care about the APTA and the House of Delegates? Like, why should you focus? I think we touched on this just a little bit, but you can get specific now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have touched on it a little bit, but the House of Delegates and the APTA governance, which is the board and the House and all the work being done by the organization, that's the place to make change. And that one of the places, and it's the place I've chosen to spend a lot of my time. But, there a lot of times people think that's just some big debate that's happening and I don't understand it. And I don't know what the downstream impacts of these things are. Like, I really think that sort of membership and professionalism in general is what you make of it. And so show up, get involved, ask questions, understand what the debate is, and then you're going to get involved. And there are downstream implications of every one of these things that gets passed at the House of Delegates. And they do impact practice. They do impact the work of the organization and what happens. And And that's why you should care, because member or not, the decisions being made and the things that are happening are going to impact downstream your profession and most importantly, your patients. So telehealth's a great example, right? Because of a couple of delegates, maybe we're going to have better description of how to do telehealth and physical therapy, you know, because of one delegate who thought it was really important for us to maybe have a more obvious seat at the table to discuss the impacts of mental health in the work we do. We're going to have a document that describes our role in collaborating in mental health, you know, and those are just two examples of the work that was done this year, but they do impact things. And it's also really easy to read some of these motions and say, well, that doesn't impact me because I do, you know, neuro practice and that's more ortho or whatever. But it impacts your profession and the next time it'll impact you and the patients that you serve. So you have to be sort of on the team all the time, not just, when it matters, to your own impact.
Showing up is one thing we talked about with the question we just fielded in terms of about how to get involved with the APTA. Do you need to be a delegate to be involved? Do you need to run for like the biggest office to be involved? There's got to be a lot of other ways.
Yeah. So, you know, I really would love to highlight the work that the Student Assembly did this year. And I got to brag a little bit on another Duke grad, Mitch Lane. We talked about USRA. Both of them were on the Student Assembly board this year. But I didn't even know this until sort of midway through the house. But the students this year organized a GroupMe chat that I think at one time or throughout the whole 3 days had, you know, around 150 people that were just chatting about what they were watching on the live stream for house. And students were asking each other questions and trying to understand the process. And, you know, that's what we need. Like, we need conversations happening around what these discussions are. And we need people that are asking questions. And like next year, I hope that there are five times as many people on that group chat trying to understand the discussion and the debate. And I hope that state delegations and members are having similar conversations. Like, that's a great way to get involved. We see often individual members advocating to their delegates about something that's important to them. And so pay attention, see what's going on. Any APTA member can get into the APTA hub and see the discussion and the debate throughout the year. And it does make a difference when members contact their delegates and say, I really feel passionately about this and I want you to pay attention to this debate. And here's why I think that that's important. I remember from my time as a state delegate, I got reached out to often about issues, and we saw that happen this year with several of the motions, I think, where passionate members that were paying attention really advocated and made an influence, whether they were a delegate or not.
You're the vice speaker. So, I mean, I would love to have you as a co-host. I'll get you the headset microphone when you're not vice speaker. How cool would it be to maybe a group chat, but we could do play-by-play, Kyle.
You know, like color commentary.
Someone just called point of order. Kyle.
Oh, the vice speaker just picked his nose. Yeah.
That would be fun. We should do that.
Would be fun. That can be my retirement job.
That'd be a retirement job. All right. So we talked about how to get involved, why to get involved. And now let's talk about the things that happened will have repercussions in the future. We want them to be positive. We bring in the future of the APTA with my crystal ball emoji down there. What's the future of APTA? Give us kind of the into the future look.
You know, the future of APTA, I think, is on everybody's minds right now. It was before COVID. It is even more now. The APTA board has been working really hard the last few years to really sort of have an organization that's fit for the future and to make sure we're an organization that meets the needs of our patients and members, not just now, but into the next century, right? Next year, we're going to celebrate our 100th anniversary as an organization. And that's great to party a little bit and pat ourselves on the back for making it to 100. But APTA and the board and the House are really working hard to look ahead and make sure we're ready for the next 100 years. And that's hard to do, right? To look out into the future. And I think that that's important. We need an organization that is diverse, and we need an organization and diverse in all ways. We need an organization that is listening to our members, and we need opportunities for our members of all types to be able to speak up and to be able to bring those ideas. And I mentioned that earlier, like we need to support ways for people that have alternative opinions or ideas that are totally, you know, out of the box to bring those forward and be heard. And I think the House does that, but I think the House can get even better at doing that. And that's a big interest of the APTA board, is to make sure we have a governance structure going forward that welcomes everybody to be involved and to share their ideas and opinions, because, you know, we're all working to make our profession better and to make our patients and clients have the things that they need. And we need all the ideas. And I think that, you know, I'm not a super old guy. Jimmy and I are the same age, so we don't think we're old, but I already recognize that there's some amazing leaders coming behind us. And I want to build an organization that they're going to be excited about inheriting. And they're going to start inheriting that in the next few years and in the next 10 years. And so we need them at the table now to speak up and say, here's what we want. And we have a huge opportunity to do that over the next year. So in 2021 at the House of Delegates, there's a committee that's been working for a year already and will continue to work this next year to reorganize our bylaws. And our bylaws are sort of the sort of top document that describes how we operate as an organization. And everything's on the table right now to totally reorganize that and to totally bring forward ideas that will help us move into that next century. And I don't think that we can do that effectively unless we have everybody engaged and those voices. So questions like, how do I get involved as a new professional, or how do I get involved as a new student? We need you. We need you to knock on the doors of your delegates and your chapter presidents and your section presidents and any other leader you can find and say, here's what we need. And here's what is going to take for me as a new professional to get involved, or for me as a non-member to be interested, or for me as somebody that's kind of mid-career and not sure if I want to re-engage. Like, we need those voices to be really loud.
Love it. And I'd be a bad APTA committee member. I'm on the steering committee. I'd be bad member of me, not to mention that, as you alluded to, 2021 is 100 years of the American Therapy Association. And we, myself, Sky Donovan, Kathy Cholik, Susan Appley, a lot of members on the Centennial Steering Committee, Kathy Kubota, Katie Sutton, Becky Craik, Connie Hauser. The first thing we said was, we're not here to throw a party. We're here to throw a party, but that's not our primary directive. Our directive is, how can we celebrate the last 100 years, but also in the same breath, how do we look forward and set us up for the next 100 or 200 years? But yes, there will be a party, don't worry. But that party needs to set the stage for the things we're going to do in the next 100 years. So I can't wait for that.
And how do we make sure that this organization that does amazing things right now can continue to do those? And it's only going to be able to continue to do those if we have the next generation of leaders that's excited to dig in. And so we need to create an organization and a profession that's ready to accept those leaders.
Yeah. My mom does want to chime in and say, thanks for saying
I saw that. Jimmy and I are separated by about 6 months, I think. Yeah. So he's not old. He's very young.
All right. You ready for the parting shot? We're going to do that right now. You ready?
Sure.
Let's do that. Parting shot brought to you by our friends at the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. We just gave away access to their current concepts of orthopedic physical therapy. That's a great OCS prep course, so check them out online at orthopt.org. Upper extremity, lower extremity, they've got like 28 courses right now that you could take. So if you want to level up your orthopedic skills, the leaders in orthopedic PT, the Academy of Orthopedic PT. Again, that website, orthopt.org. We will have another contest to give away access to another one of their courses coming up in the next week. So parting shot, this is your chance. It's like kind of like a mic drop moment here. Oh. What do you want to leave the audience with? We've been talking for an hour. Can you believe that? I told you.
Oh, time flies.
So what's your parting shot? What do you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, I think my parting shot's a little bit of what I was just saying. You know, no matter where you are in your career journey, this stuff matters, and and it matters more if you show up. Show up, speak out. The APTA leadership, the board of directors, the House officers want to hear you and want those opinions and want to support you, to share your ideas and us work together to make this organization something that's ready to head into the next century. And that can only happen if all the young guns come out and start working with us to make this organization what we want it to be going forward and what you need it to be. So show up, speak out, and make sure you stay involved.
Great parting shot. Bummed we didn't get to do it in person at Next, but hopefully we'll get to do this in person. Appreciate it. Kyle Covington, Vice Speaker of the House. Kyle, thanks for coming by. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. This was fun.
Like what you hear? Tell a friend or leave a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right, show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Our home on the internet. ptpintcast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second year PT student
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pintcast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
you. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.